Welcome to this week's edition of the Baseball America College Podcast. I'm Teddy Cahill. Joining me, as always, is my colleague, Joe Healy. And we will be joined here in a little bit by Wake Forest coach Tom Walter, who is joining us to talk about the Demon Deacons, their challenging 2021 season, but their very promising future and how they're looking to bounce back from that that tough season in 2021. So a lot to get into here about Wake Forest, and we're going to have a little bit of a broader conversation about the ACC as well here on today's edition of the Baseball America College Podcast presented by Rapsodo. Rapsodo has become the industry standard in player performance data. Coaches use Rapsodo data as a measuring stick for player development and evaluation. The Rapsodo National Player Database is a free service that allows you to see how you stack up against your peers and provides a pathway to get discovered by scouts. You can check out the Rapsodo National Player Database at rapsodo.com/national-database. All right, Joe, here we are. It is December 20th as we record this, just a few days before Christmas. Last week, we came at you late in the week, and I told you it wasn't going to be like that again this week because of the way the calendar falls this year with Christmas Eve on a Friday. So here we are earlier in the week, recording another podcast, and we're jamming this one in between the end of the handbook and the start of the unofficial Christmas break that you and I are not actually taking, but are kind of taking. So happy early Christmas break, I guess, to us both.
Indeed, we are bending over backwards in a way. Not this is a huge imposition, but certainly trying to keep up, keeping the podcast coming for you guys. So we squeezed this one in, and otherwise a week that's kind of difficult to do so. Although we'll say having Christmas Eve on a Friday, Christmas on a Saturday, depending on your point of view, like you can either, I guess it can cut both ways, but I kind of like it because there's just something, those weeks where Christmas falls in like a Wednesday, those are always kind of tough, because it really does disrupt the entire week and you're not sure what to do, especially if you're in a position I've been in before where you're working a typical job where you're, you know, you have X number of, you know, paid time off days and you got to figure it out. And do you take them before Christmas or after Christmas? And what if you don't have, you know, enough days to take that whole week off? What do you do there? So I'm having it at the end of the week, I think is helpful in that regard. One other thing,
as someone that's never worked a desk job like that, if say you went in on the 23rd, is that like actually better because nobody's in your office?
100%. Like, I'm glad you asked the question, because like I was actually someone who enjoyed, now I never, so the way at my last job, the way it worked is we had like these floating holidays where you could choose between, for instance, the day after Thanksgiving, or Christmas Eve. Or you could use a vacation day, for example, for Christmas Eve or whatever. You didn't have to work one of those days. But I actually kind of enjoyed working. Actually, the day after Thanksgiving was typically my favorite to work, because I usually wasn't going far out of town for Thanksgiving at that point in my life. And so, you go into the office and no one's there. Like, so there's not a lot of distraction. The parking lot is pretty empty. You get a good parking spot. You know, you can really plow through some stuff without being bothered by meetings or phone calls or whatever else. So that was always a day that I saved up, like where I needed to, like if I was really working a spreadsheet that I've been working on to get some data inputted, or if I was working on a long project that I needed just a lot of quiet time for, like that would always save them up for those weeks. So because you're right, like it is kind of nice. Now other people see it the other way and it's like, well, when the office is dead, it's hard to motivate. And I get that. I was always just the other end of the spectrum there.
Very, so for everyone that's struggling to motivate this week and is turning to the podcast, we're here for you. That's right. What I'm trying to say here.
That's right. One other thing, this is probably like the third time I've said this in the last six podcasts, but apologize for my voice. The cold season has been difficult on me, probably just in large part because, you know, hey, we haven't been exposed to a lot over the last couple of years because we've been, you know, sheltering from COVID in a lot of cases. So, it seems like the cold season has hit me particularly difficult. This is like my second or third cold just since the beginning of November. So I'm going through it right now, feeling well enough to do this podcast, but it does mean you're going to get a little bit of a little bit of a lower baritone for me. You may get a voice catch here from time to time, but I just got just downed my latest nice steaming cup of Theraflu. So I'm feeling okay. Although I will say it is the berry version of the Theraflu. I much prefer the honey lemon tea version of Theraflu because it actually does, like as you're drinking it, like you can really talk yourself into, oh, this is just a cup of hot tea. The berry one though has a medicinal quality to the taste that I am not super fond of. Also, it is infused with menthol. And so it also just kind of tastes like I'm smoking a pack of Newports. So not my favorite, but I'm plowing through it. And it's the only flavor the grocery store that I went to this morning to get it had. So that's what I got. But it will help me get through this here podcast.
Well, there you go. We're battling through, trying to get to the finish line here in 2021. And we're doing that today, talking about Wake Forest. The Demon Deacons last year, a disappointing under 500 record, both in the league and overall. They dealt with a lot in terms of injuries and COVID, and following the season, they had some changes made on the coaching staff. And, you know, frankly, to peel back the curtain a little bit here, we don't often talk with coaches that are coming off of challenging seasons here on the podcast. Joe and I are a lot more likely to pull on or to you know, bring on somebody who won their conference or had a nice tournament run or at the very least, you know, made the tournament. But this is a little bit of a different story here with Wake Forest. But I think there's the Demon Deacons are an interesting program. They made super regionals in 2018, of course, and lost Florida, or that was 2017. Lost to Florida. They hosted regionals. You know, they've done some good things as a program, but the last couple of years, I mean, obviously 2020 was challenging for everyone. But they were up and down before the season was canceled. They were in the preseason top 25, and then they were they had a lot of mixed results in the short season, and then 2021 didn't go as they would have hoped on most levels. And now here they are, though. They brought in the best recruiting class in program history, at least according to the Baseball America recruiting rankings. Like, we'll see what the freshmen do over the next few years. And they're stacking that up against a group of freshmen that played really, really well in 2021, even though the overall season didn't go so great. So they're starting to put together a really good group, and I'll be very curious to see where things go. So, with that being the context, I just think that this is a kind of a fascinating program right now. And it was great to hear what Tom Walter feels about this group now as they enter the what should be a pretty important and pretty interesting spring.
Yeah, it does feel like a little bit of a new beginning for a program, and one that is simple to say, obviously, because that they are turning over a lot of roster. But I just mean in terms of, you know, that things went so poorly last year, whether you talk about the COVID, you talk about, you know, he talks about the injuries, you know, you'll hear him talk about that a little bit. You talk about just having a veteran group that frankly, you know, I appreciated his candor in saying some things about, you know, we just had a veteran group that didn't think they'd be here right now. They thought they'd be in pro ball. And so a lot of things conspired to make last season really difficult for Wake. And they were underwhelming if you go back to 2019 with a similar group of players. And so, you know, this young group of players and the freshman class that just showed up, I think has given some new hope into this program. And I don't think it's necessarily like a long rebuild project in front of them. I think this is a team that could win now. I guess we'll get into more of the specifics of that as we go, but it does not seem implausible for that team to be good right away. And certainly it looks like a team that's really building for something, you know, next year and the year after.
Absolutely. So with that, let's just get to Tom Walter. And we're, you know, again, it's an interesting time in the Wake Forest program. So we're very interested to hear what he has to say about this group as he reflects on 2021 and looks ahead to 2022. So we'll talk with Wake Forest coach Tom Walter here in a second. But first, check this out.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Why do I use Indeed for our hiring at Baseball America? Because it takes so much of the busy work out of hiring and does it for me. I can find highly qualified candidates in one place, set up interviews, and communicate with them all on Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualification preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So you use Indeed. As you use it more, the better it gets. And listeners to this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Baseball America. Just go to Indeed.com/Baseball America right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Baseball America. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Save big money on your next project now at Menards. Update your home with low-maintenance vinyl windows from Jeld-Wen. They're durable, energy efficient, and are low maintenance. Menards carries over 100 different size and style options in stock, ready to take home today. Save big on Jeld-Wen windows now at Menards. And don't forget to check out our flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at Menards.
Today on the Baseball America College Podcast, we're excited to be joined by Wake Forest coach Tom Walter. Wake Forest coming off of a challenging 2021 season, coach, but I know the future remains bright there in Winston-Salem, bringing in a top 25 recruiting class this fall. A lot to look forward to the 2022 season. So we're excited to hear from you about the Deacs and everything around the Wake Forest program here.
Yeah, thanks, Teddy, and thanks, Joe, for having me on this morning. It's an honor to be involved with Baseball America. You guys are the flagship publication for college baseball, so we're super excited to be here.
Yeah, so let's dive into this. I guess last year obviously was not the year anyone at Wake Forest was hoping for baseball wise. Finishes at 20-27. In some ways, though, from the outside, it felt like the season never really got started because you guys got hit by COVID so early. You had to shut down. What were the challenges from dealing with that, and then from, you know, just trying to keep the team together and keep pushing? And you did got that they did a pretty good job of that because you ended the season with a sweep of Pittsburgh.
Yeah, Teddy, it was certainly challenging. You know, we started the season with two injuries to, you know, two of our top three pitchers went down within the first week of the season. You know, we lost Antonio Menendez and Shane Smith. I mean, Tony was going to be our Friday night guy, and Shane was probably going to be our Sunday guy. And, you know, both had pre-existing injuries in high school and just, you know, kind of bubbled to the surface at the wrong time. But you know, anytime you lose two of your top three or four guys like that, I mean, certainly Will Fleming and Ryan Cusick were talented, and Eric Adler at the back. But so we still had some pieces. But you know, for a school like Wake Forest, you know, anytime we're losing two of our top three arms like that, it's going to be hard for us to recover from that. And then, you know, we got off to a little bit of a slow start. You know, beat Northeastern 2 out of 3. You know, lost a game there that we probably should have won. You know, lost the game to Coastal in extra innings at home that we probably should have won, and then lost 2 out of 3 to Notre Dame. So, you know, kind of started out a little slow, compared to how we thought we'd start. And then, as you said, we got hit with COVID. So, you know, on the heels of that, you know, COVID came in and you know, we ended up missing the Boston College weekend. And then we went down to Miami with basically half a team down to Miami. And so, you know, to say we had a rocky start is probably a gross understatement. And then, you add to it that truthfully, we had a bunch of seniors who were disappointed they weren't drafted last year, would have been guys that in a typical draft had would have gone in the, probably sixth, seventh, eighth rounds, kind of right in there. And when you get off to a rocky start and you've got a bunch of seniors and we had some injuries, that, the reality is we had some guys that really just started to play for the draft and play for themselves, and the team, took a back seat, and that made it super challenging for us.
I'm curious if you've had time to reflect now. I mean, we're, believe it or not, coming up on 2 years from the time that COVID became a thing in all of our lives, and we learned what that was together. I'm curious if you've had a little bit of time to reflect at this point on how dealing with that and going through that and kind of guiding your team through that has bettered you as a coach, or just at least changed you as a coach now that you've had some time, we'd all had so long dealing with it.
Yeah, well, I think it's a lot of things. I think first and foremost, I think something that's super on my radar screen now that probably wasn't, 3 or 4 years ago is the mental health of our student athletes. They feel so much more anxiety and stress. And I think some of it is COVID related and some of it is just the nature of social media and things like that, but they feel more pressure than ever before. And I think as coaches, it's our responsibility to be more in tune to that and have a deeper relationship with our players so that we can help them, help guide them and be there for them because things are tougher than ever before. So I feel for these high school and college age kids that have had to go through this COVID period where there's just so much uncertainty and anxiety. So I agree. It certainly changed the way we coach and that we have to develop deeper and more meaningful relationships with our players.
You mentioned that, and your son has gone through that. He's playing at Georgetown now. Has that helped you to realize that maybe even more, seeing his journey through all of this and Georgetown's struggle to get on the field last year and all the rest of the things that have come with that?
Yeah, I think for all of us, Teddy, it's, there's just so much more on our plate than ever before. I remember the days fondly where it used to be just about tamping the mound, cutting the grass and rolling the bats and balls out there. And it just seems like it's just a lot more complicated than that. Last year, the travel plans alone, two buses and meals and, keeping guys safe and staying on guys about being masked up and all those things. And then, trying to get the vaccines in the middle of the season and all those things. I mean, there was just a lot on everybody's plate last year, and obviously not just Wake Forest, but everybody everywhere. So, it's been complex, to say the least. But it's the world we live in. And as I tell our players up to, all the time, it's up to us to adjust to the world because the world's not going to adjust to us.
Let's transition to some on the field stuff here. Talk a little bit about the team. First question would be on the coaching staff. You added over the offseason, Corey Mascara to the coaching staff as the pitching coach. Fans probably previously remember him a little bit from his time at Maryland. What has he brought to the table so far as you've seen him work with your guys?
Well, I just love our staff additions. The reality is, we've got Corey as a pitching coach. We've got Ty Blank Myers, our volunteer, and then Mike McFerrin as our new player development coordinator. So, if you look at our staff of five coaches, the three coaches, the volunteer and the player development guy, only Bill Salento and myself are still here. So we've turned over, three of the five and it's been a great change for us. I mean, again, we love Joey Hammond and he's going to do great things at High Point and we miss him here every day. And same thing with John Hendricks, who's back in pro ball. I mean, John did some great things with our pitchers, obviously with Jared Schuster and Ryan Cusick. And we miss John every day, but I love the new energy and passion. We've had a great culture shift that started with our team and our guys are a lot more team focused. It started last year. It started during the season last year. I had a meeting with our leverage freshmen, in the middle of April last year, and basically, sat down with them and said, with the Brock Wilkins and Cam Anassis and Rhett Lauder and those guys, Teddy McGraw, we've got a super, super talented group of sophomores in here. And I know some of those guys have been ranked in your 2023 draft prospect list. But my point is, I sat down with those guys and I said, hey, this reminds me a lot of the 2015 season that we had at Wake Forest, where we had, some guys that that weren't as invested as they needed to be. And we needed to clean a little bit of house. And we were able to do that. In 2016, we're in a regional. In 2017, we're in a super regional. So, you know, point is we needed to make some changes. I'm not talking about staff changes. I'm just talking about changes in our team culture. And our freshmen at the time, who are now sophomores, totally bought into that. And then guys like Eric Adler and Adam Cicere and Pierce Bennett, you know, I was in touch with them all summer, you know, just talking through some of this stuff. And they really rallied the guys this summer, the older guys, the now juniors and seniors, Michael Ciccone, Brendan Tinsman, those guys. And we're a closer knit bunch than ever before. So the addition of Corey Mascara, Ty Blankmeyer, and Mike McFerrin, in addition to the players, you know, being more intentional about team culture and who we are and what's important to us, has been a welcome and much needed change. So we couldn't be more excited about where this program's headed.
You mentioned last year's freshman class and now sophomores, and those guys are, you know, we saw what they did last year. You saw what they did over the summer, guys like Wilkin and McGraw, and they have continued to develop, it seems like. And now this year you add another really talented class, one with more hype, at least right now, than last year's group. So what, we got to see what they do in the spring, but what did you see from the incoming freshmen this fall that stood out to you?
Yeah, really, really, really like our freshman position players that are here now. You know, we've got Danny Corona, who I think is going to be a special player here. You know, I'm not sure he'll be ready to play shortstop as a freshman, might have to play second for a year. And Michael Ciccone will play short. It's hard to say. We'll see what it looks like in January as far as who's going to be where. But Danny's a special talent, and we're super excited about him. Nick Kurtz is another guy that we feel like is going to do some really great things here. He's got a special bat. You know, he's kind of right in that, you know, Gavin Sheets, Bobby Seymour, you know, as far as those big power left-handed bats that have come in here and done so well. And he's you know, just as good as those guys were at this age. You know, who's to say whether he'll make the adjustments that they made or stay committed or stay healthy. But certainly at this point in the game, it's exciting to have watched him come along. We got a couple catchers that we really like in Gio Cueto and Mark Black and Chris Katz, even, who swings the bat really well, Ellie Kligman. So we added some catching depth that we much needed. And then on the mound, you know, Josh Hartle. I mean, he's as good a left-handed pitcher as there is. He's going to be in our conference rotation, you know, from day one. And he had a great fall. And Josh is one of those guys that he's got a low heartbeat. You know, and he makes pitches, and he's got three pitches that he can throw anytime in the count, and he's got command, you know, for his age, to throw as many strikes as he does and put the ball where he wants, is unique. We don't see that as much anymore. If he hadn't have pulled his name out of the draft, you know, he probably would have gotten $2.5 or $3 million, you know. And it's for us to get up, you know, you look at Vanderbilt's championship teams, and you know, they had one of those guys that turned down that kind of money and showed up on campus and led them to a championship. So, you know, Josh is one of those guys that can change a program.
You've mentioned their names a couple of times here, but you've had a little run here with Schuster and now last year with Cusick, where guys have developed over their time on campus, kind of come into their own, and then end up, you know, getting drafted high and then going on to pro ball with high expectations. Looking at your pitching staff now, how confident are you you've got that next guy in line, or group of guys you could challenge to be that next guy in line to follow in the shoes of Schuster and Cusick, et cetera?
Yeah, we've got some really talented power arms. You know, we're talking about Eric Adler, who was the Cape League reliever of the year. You know, he gave up one run all summer up on the Cape. He's added, you know, Moose has done a great job. Moose and Mike have done a great job with him. He's added two breaking balls. So last year he kind of had a half of a breaking ball and a really good fastball. And now he's got two good breaking balls and a good fastball and an improving changeup. So, you know, we've got Eric Adler, and then you've got Cam Anasi is another guy, and then Rhett Lauder and Teddy McGraw and Josh Hartle. You know, so you go down our list, you look at Zach Grace, a transfer from Iona that's come in here. Brendan Oxford's throwing the ball really well. Gabe Golub's a transfer from NYU. You know, when I start to look at this year's staff, I'm super excited about it because of its depth, but also because, we've got some different looks. We're more left-handed than we've been in previous years. Crawford Wade had a good fall. Seth Keener had a good fall. And so we've got some guys that are battling. You know, I think it's, you know, you look at a guy like Reed Muscolo, and Reed is super talented, and I know he's going to be a big part of the staff. And he did a great job as our Tuesday starter last year and had a solid year for us. You know, and this year he's battling for a role. You know, so it's like, if you have a guy who is a good Tuesday starter for you, and this year it's uncertain what his role is going to be the following year, it means you have a pretty good pitching staff. So, and again, we've got to stay healthy, and the guys have to continue to buy in. But so far, I couldn't be more excited about, you know, the potential that we have on our staff. And, you know, again, I don't know that we'll have a first rounder this year, you know, coming off Schuster and Cusick, but I think the following year there's a really good chance. And then the year after that again. So, I'm excited about the firepower we have on our staff.
We saw a really impressive freshman spring from Brock Wilken. And if anything, he was even better over the summer in the Cape Cod League. He won MVP honors as a rising sophomore. That's the first time that's happened in more than a decade on the Cape. What is it about Brock that led him step into your lineup on day one and has just led to such an easy transition to college baseball overall?
Well, it's his work ethic and his intentionality. I mean, that guy, he lives baseball. You know, when we talk to our guys all the time, it's like, you know, do you plan your day around baseball, or are you playing baseball around your day? I think there's a big distinction there. And Brock is a guy that plans his day around baseball. It's like what he eats, you know, the transition he's made in his body since he's been here is unbelievable. I mean, my best comp for Brock is, I think he can be Scott Rowland at the next level. And that's a potential Hall of Famer there. I mean, so, you know, I just love that young man, and he just puts in so much work. He makes everybody around him better. He's just relentless. I mean, the guy, he hits 4 or 5 times a day, you know, taking ground balls. Ty Blackmire's done a great job with him on the defensive part of things. I mean, last year I would have told you he was an adequate third baseman in the ACC last year. This year he's going to be an above average ACC third baseman. At some point you're going to look at him as a plus defender, you know, because he can throw, he's moving much better. And he works so hard at it. So again, the transformation he's made on defense has been special too. So I just love that young man. And if we can get Adam Cicere and Nick Kurtz and Danny Corona and Michael Turconi and Brendan Tinsman and those guys that are super talented around him to get on base in front of him and protect him behind him, you know, he's going to be tough for people to deal with.
Last year, we had you and your former player, Kevin Jordan, on the podcast to talk about the organization you guys founded together, Get in the Game, you know, working with school children to, you know, kind of broaden some of the dialogue around race in this country. So what can you tell us about what the organization has been up to over the last year and where you guys are at these days?
Yeah, thanks for asking. It's been a pretty awesome ride, and fortunately we've got great staff and people that are doing the work and allow me to coach baseball. But we won an ESPN award, so we won a Stuart Scott Inspire Award this past summer as part of the Sports Humanitarian Awards through ESPN, and it was picked up by ABC, which was, you know, I mean, I don't even have the words. I mean, to be up there on stage with Billie Jean King and Joe Torre and so many people that are doing so many wonderful things in this world is an unbelievable honor. And we were very humbled by that. And Stuart Scott's a Winston-Salem guy. A lot of people don't know that, but Stuart from Winston-Salem, went to high school here, grew up here. And so it was extra special for us, you know, given that Stuart's one of our hometown guys. But we've got some exciting things coming up. I can't say what they are, but we've got some exciting things coming up with ESPN that you're going to be hearing a lot about soon between ESPN and Disney. But point is that we've grown our program. So we were, you know, the first year we worked with about 100 students, you know, in a pilot program. We're still in the pilot phase, still tweaking the curriculum and the program. We're working with about 1,000 students this year. And And so we're right on pace. You know, our goal has been to 10X the number of students we're working with each year. So year one, 100, year two, 1,000, next year, 10,000, and the year after that, 100,000. And we're right on schedule and pace to continue to make that impact. And most importantly, you know, we're getting these kids out into their community, performing some community service and helping to level the playing field in their hometowns.
So we will start to wrap up here with our final question. It seems apropos given that this is Christmas week. We are coming up on, believe it or not, Christmas later this week, just around the corner. And we like to wrap up talking about food a little bit. So we will posit to you, Coach Walter, the question of, you know, what kind of food is eaten typically around the Walter household? I know there's not necessarily as much of a strong link between, you know, Thanksgiving and turkey. I know some people do ham on Christmas. Some people just kind of roll the turkey out again for Christmas. My family goes completely off the board and we usually make some homemade Mexican food. So in the Walter household, what is the Christmas spread looking like year to year?
So my mom's birthday is on the 22nd and she loves rack of lamb. So we are, we combine our Christmas and her birthday dinner and we do a rack of lamb every year. So we're all in on lamb. You know, Thanksgiving is my favorite meal because my mom gets the dried corn from back in my hometown of Johnstown that I love. It's a special kind of corn. If you haven't had it, put it on your bucket list. You know, so I'm like a corn, mashed potatoes, you know, stuffing and turkey guy. And that's my favorite meal of the year, like right there. I could eat that meal 300 days a year. But for Christmas, you know, because of my mom and her French heritage and her father's, you know, favorite dish to make was rack of lamb. So we're a rack of lamb family.
And that is an answer I did not anticipate hearing. So I got kind of what we were looking for there. Are there specific sides that go along with that or that are kind of annual traditions, or do you mix and match that a little bit?
So my sister will make her John Wayne casserole. That's her thing. I can't tell you what's in that, but it's a lot of cheese and egg and potatoes. I don't know. So, but it's really good. And her husband will typically make some like English pudding or things like that. So it's a pretty eclectic spread, so to speak, that we, you know, we're not for lack of food in the Walter household on any day, let alone the holidays.
Well, that is that sounds like a great, you know, double celebration. It's not just one celebration. You're getting two there, and you know, hopefully it's a fantastic one. I can't believe that we're already at the holidays myself, but we're looking forward to it, and it sounds like you are as well.
No, for sure, guys. I hope you have a great one. Again, I really appreciate everything you do for our game, and appreciate you having me on here, and your support means a lot to our program and to college baseball.
Absolutely. We're looking forward to seeing what the Deacs have in 2022. And we thank you, Coach Walter, for taking the time to break it all down with us.
Thanks, Teddy. Thanks, Joe. Have a great one.
Thank you again to Wake Forest coach Tom Walter for joining us today on the Baseball America College podcast. Joe, we talked about it a little bit before, but I mean, it's, just hearing everything that Wake went through last year in terms of injuries and then COVID, you know, it, with that being the context, you know, it is kind of understandable how the season got away from them as quickly as it did. But, you know, even with that happening, you still had Brock Wilkin putting together a great freshman season. You had Eric Adler showing some things at the back end of the bullpen. And, you know, they had a variety of other younger players that stepped up. And I mean, it just makes it easy to feel like despite that subpar season, that there still was decent progress made that they can build on moving forward.
Yeah. It's a weird season. I mean, you alluded to it in the intro when we were bringing Coach Walter on. I mean, they swept Pitt to end the season. You know, and Pitt at that point was kind of the wheels were falling off a little. And that was a Pitt team that was going from being among the 20 initial host sites to not being in the field of 64 at all. So we all know what was happening there. But Wake was the one that delivered the final blow there. You know, if Pitt wins that series, it's probably a whole different story. And so they did that. They also won a series against Florida State right in the teeth of the season. It's also at the beginning of the year, right? I mean, he talked about, you know, we won a series against Northeastern and probably should have swept it. And that Northeastern team turned out to be really, really good when we talked to their coach a couple of weeks ago, for the reason that they were, you know, coming off a really good season, as you talked about. We talked to coaches who are coming off a good season. So, and they played Notre Dame in that first weekend. Granted, it was first weekend of ACC play, but, you know, they played Notre Dame about as well as just about anybody, as we later saw. So, it kind of strikes me that the seeds were there for this team to be pretty good. There were enough instances, though, of players that just underperformed or just didn't quite look themselves or what have you, that I still don't know that I would have had a ton of confidence in the result being wildly different necessarily. But I think this team could have been a regional team had things just played out a little more in their favor. And, you know, coulda, shoulda, woulda, that's the way this stuff goes. But there was enough good in there that, you know, you could squint hard enough and kind of see like, okay, like, things really did just get sideways on this team. This is not a case of a team that was just completely out of sorts and had no hope.
Yeah. It's a strange deal that, you know, you look at a team now that is without Bobby Seymour, who at one point was the ACC player of the year a couple of years ago. And Chris Lanzilli moved on and he was such a regular in the lineup and they lost several other players. And it's like, well, okay. But you know, even if we hadn't heard that, you know, that some things may not have been quite right mentally or whatever with the makeup of the team, like it still is like, well, something just wasn't working with that group. And now they're going to get a clean-ish break and a fresh start with this 2023 group with Brock Wilkin leading the way. But also, I mean, they've got talented juniors as well. And those are, it's their team now.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, it reminds me of just the idea that, you know, roster building and putting together a team that that is ready to compete, especially in a conference like the ACC, is not an exact science, because you add up the pieces from last year as you kind of did, and you go, okay, well, that's a team that, you know, is competitive, should probably be in the mix for regional, and it just didn't work out that way. And, you know, by the way, you know, talking about how there were some guys who were maybe disappointed to be there, you know, maybe weren't as bought in as they could have been. Like, you know, obviously it didn't work out, but you could also kind of understand that a little bit, you know, like 2020 was your year, right? You're going to get drafted. The team's going to be good. You know, these are guys who, mind you, were recruited and came to campus in the aftermath of that 2017 Super Regional team. So, you know, you come to campus feeling like, okay, we're the next group that's going to do that. So, you're looking at 2020 as the year and the season gets started and maybe, you know, you're off to a little bit of an uneven start, but you had the whole season in front of you, basically all of ACC play, save for one series. But then the season gets canceled. Then you're like, okay, well, that didn't work out, but hey, you know, I'm still get a chance to start my pro career. And okay, that gets taken from you. And, you know, we can relitigate the 5-round draft and the $20,000 signing bonus and all that jazz. But the reality of that was the situation. And so now you end up back in 2021. And oh, by the way, you're going to have to wear masks all the time. And your fall practice is going to basically be you having to be, you know, put into these small groups, and you can't really hang out like you used to do. And our road trips are going to be extra cautious and, you know, this, that, and the other thing. And that's just not like, it is kind of understandable at the same time, you know, as we can be disappointed in the results, but you can also understand where some of that might be coming from. And so some of those guys have moved on, you know, some of those veterans, other guys have transferred and what have you. And so you kind of hope that maybe a little bit of a fresh start there is helpful. And I think the same could be the case with Wake Forest. I put them in my bounce back teams to watch because, like, as we've talked about time and again here on this podcast, you know, that young core is pretty doggone good. And if you just isolate those younger players, you know, Wake is right there with most of the rest of the ACC. Of course, there's more to it than that. And I think what's tricky about the ACC is that I think we feel pretty good about Notre Dame at this point, given what they return. And we talked about Louisville a couple of weeks ago and the idea that, yeah, they weren't very good last year, but given their history, you expect them to be back next year. And there are teams you can set your watch to. I think NC State's going to be pretty good again, thanks in large part to a transfer class there and a talented group of freshmen. But there are a whole bunch of teams in the middle of that conference that you can make pretty compelling cases of why they're going to be better, and also pretty compelling cases why they might get buried in the ACC. And so I think last year's results are tough to read because of the, you know, not just COVID cancellations, but the ACC played so many conference games that it kind of felt like everybody got squished into the middle as opposed to teams kind of ending up on one of the standings or the other. So this is a really hard season to read in terms of what to expect in the ACC, because it feels like last year's data is kind of noisy for a lot of different reasons. And also it complicates it when you have a team like Wake that would be really easy to just stick them at the bottom of the, you know, predicted standings because of their struggles last year, but that wouldn't be fair to how talented this team is in terms of their young players.
Before we kind of try and make sense of where Wake Forest might fit within the ACC in 22, Joe, you saw them this fall. What did you think when you were able to get out there and take a look at the Deacs?
Yeah, well, first of all, there was just an energy about them at practice, and that can be like a really ephemeral thing, like that doesn't, like it can mean something and it could not, right? I mean, like that's the kind of thing, like if the team ends up being good, you can point to it and say like, see, I saw this in the fall, they just had a good energy about them. And if they're not good, it doesn't mean anything, right? So, but they did have that kind of energy about them. And I think, you know, I think when we talked to him about his new coaches, like it kind of ended up being a bigger conversation, but specifically Corey Mascara, who's their new pitching coach, who comes from Maryland and did some good things there. Like that guy brings some real energy to the proceedings. And so he kind of was, maybe ringleader is not the right word, but you know, he was just bouncing everywhere and was like just buzzing around the field and was interacting not just with his pitchers, but with the hitters and, you know, a little bit with the analytics team. Wake has a pretty robust student analytics team that helps them out. And, you know, he went over and talked to them and like, he was just all over the place. And so I think there was a kind of a palpable energy there. The other thing that struck me about it is that it feels to me like the depth of talent is better than it has been the last couple of years. And I don't want to take anything away from some of the guys they've had, but you know, I think they had some real dudes, but I think they also had some guys that were able to take advantage of the fact they play in a really hitter-friendly park, and maybe had some numbers that were good performers, but they weren't necessarily like, you know, real dudes necessarily. And on the mound, they had a lot of throwers. I don't know how many pitchers they had. They had good stuff, but you know, and you know, some of those guys struggle with the transition from hitter to pitcher. And so we have to see them do it, but I was really impressed. You know, it's Brock Wilkin obviously is the standout guy in that lineup, but I've liked Michael Cercone since I saw him in the summer a couple of years ago. I think he's just a really solid guy, has a little more juice in his bat than you would think given his stature. You know, Lucas Costello is another guy I think could end up having a breakout year for them. I'm sure I'm missing a guy or two there, but you know, among the freshmen, Danny Corona really looks the part. I mean, that's a, you know, a shortstop by trade, but is a big, strong kid who I think is kind of one of the next stars in this group. And then on the mound, I don't, you know, I asked the question about, is there another Schuster or Cusick here? And, you know, unless it's, you know, I don't think Josh Hartle is ready for that right off the bat. Obviously you can't be a draft eligible guy right off the bat, but I just mean, in terms of being that level of pitcher, you know, Rhett Loader is maybe the guy there. The stuff is certainly there. And it's important to remember, even though we were a little bit disappointed in some of the pitching development Wake Forest showed or didn't show over the last couple of years, it is important to note that, you know, Schuster and Cusick both did take steps forward. There's a reason they got drafted in the first round. They did show some development, even if they were maybe a little more isolated on the roster in terms of doing that versus some of the other guys. And so, so we've seen that step. My big takeaway with Hartle is that the guy just really knows how to pitch. Like it's a scrimmage. Yes. So I don't want to get too carried away. It was inter squad scrimmage, but you know, the guys he faced, he worked with pace. He was really knew how to spot his breaking ball. He worked quick, you know, worked quickly, seemed to have an idea of what he wanted to do. And the at-bats against him just weren't very good. So I think those are all positive indicators. And so I, you know, whether Wake has the top end talent outside of their top one or two guys to compete at the, you know, to be a regional team or even better in the ACC, that remains to be seen. But I think the depth of talent here suggests that I think we'll be talking about this team as a real contender at the top of the ACC in 2023 and maybe beyond. But the question is really what we get immediately, because that I'm a little less convinced of.
The other guy to bring up is a potential like first round arm is Teddy McGraw. And that, again, it's not a this year thing. So there might be a break. It might be that Adler is the top draft eligible arm. And, you know, I don't see any reason why he wouldn't be among the best, or at least like in terms of draft regarded best relievers in the country. And I mean, that's highly unlikely to turn into a first round pick in 2022, like 20 years ago. 15 years ago, that might have, but probably not now. But I mean, he still should be a reasonably high draft pick, I would think. He was sensational on the Cape. He's got power stuff. I mean, it could be a instant impact kind of guy in pro ball. So, I mean, you've got a lot of pieces there. And yeah, I mean, I don't know precisely where this is going to go in 22. You know, there's a difference between saying like Brock Wilkin is really good and, you know, Brock Wilkin could be a top 10 pick in 2023 and saying, well, okay, Brock Wilkin is now from opening day of 2022 ready to anchor the lineup of a team that is a top 25 team or better, you know? So, I mean, you're just asking a lot of some of these younger players potentially, but if he is able to do it, if Danny Corona takes the step forward, if Josh Hartle is ready to go, you know, some of these other guys, then yeah, I mean, you're looking at a really, really good team. So before we went live, Joe and I were kind of talking about this, and you know, you look at the ACC last year, and I mean, what, like half the conference made regionals, teams that missed Louisville, Clemson, Wake, BC, Pitt, and Virginia Tech. Looking at that group, I mean, let's take Louisville out of this because they were as bubbly as you possibly could be, I think, last year. And historically, they've been the best program in the ACC over the, you know, since they joined the conference pretty much. So let's ignore them for the time being and look at Pitt, Virginia Tech, Clemson, Wake, and BC, and Joe, for the next 3 to 4 years, like, I mean, where, or even this year, I guess, take it however you want to take it. Where is your confidence in those programs, and where does, who would you take as the program that you're most confident in?
So run those off again for me so I can look at them as I look at like what they did.
We got the Clemson Tigers.
Yep.
The Demon Deacons.
Mm.
BC Eagles.
Mm.
Pitt Panthers.
Mm.
And the Virginia Tech Hokies.
Yeah. So in terms of steadiness, I think I'd go Virginia Tech. And I think that's just a belief in John Scheff. You know, what he did at Maryland, I think, kind of stands alone a little bit. And so, although it should be noted, you know, the work that Eric Backage did before they got there, I think is part of that story as well. But certainly he kept that ball really rolling and was able to, you know, succeed off of what had been built and what he continued to build. So, but I think I have a belief in that. I think first is as maybe the steadiest of these options. So if you told me, hey, this is the team that runs off 3 or 4 regionals in a row, like, I think that might be.
Wow, I don't know. That's ever happened in Blacksburg. I'm looking that up right
now. No, that probably hadn't been. You're right. I mean, that's probably a little bit aggressive just given the lack of history there. But I just that one feels like the bottom doesn't necessarily falls out of that, especially now that they have some things, you know, new facility, things of that nature. I don't think the bottom falls out of that one. But I think Wake probably has as much high end here as anybody else. I mean, what that group of teams, a lot of them outside of maybe Clemson, you know, certainly more so than Pitt and BC and Virginia Tech. I mean, Wake has a geography advantage, you know. It also has, you know, you look at some of the stuff they have behind the scenes there. I mean, people may not really realize it, but Wake has really pulled out all the stops in trying to be a hub of player development in their baseball program. They've really put a lot of resources behind that. And so you look at their facilities and you look at their stadium first and foremost, and you might kind of go like, you know, okay, but there's a lot more to it when it comes to Wake than that. Now, the obvious answer here, I guess, I've probably glossed over a little bit, is Clemson, just because the history there suggests that the regional miss last year was a little bit of an aberration. So I'm probably, by being so quick to say Virginia Tech, probably erred, because Clemson, I think, is probably actually the right answer here. So I probably go, you know, Clemson based on the history. Virginia yeah. Tech is a bet on Scheff. But I, you know, I like the ceiling of Wake as much as anybody else here, I think.
I think, including Clemson, I probably should have thrown them out as well. Because, yes, if you look at Clemson expectations, look, they fired Jack Leggett because they were mad that they weren't going to Omaha often enough. So like that's where Clemson's expectations lie. They don't lie where the rest of these programs are. Now, you want to say, like, do you feel confident in Clemson meeting its lofty expectations? Like, I think maybe that's a different conversation. But yeah, I suppose we have to just acknowledge that Clemson is at a different place than most of the rest of these programs. To circle back to Virginia Tech, the best run in program history is either back-to-back regionals in 76-77 or making three regionals in 6 years from 94 to 99. Or sorry, 4 in 7, 94 to 2000. So also they made back-to-back in 99 to 2000. Trivia time, Joe. How many regionals has Virginia Tech made in the 21st century?
So that we're talking, so does that include 2000?
Yeah, I mean, let's just say in the 64-team field era, which starts what? Is that 97 is the first year?
Yeah.
The super regional era begins in 97?
99, I'm sorry.
99. Okay. Yeah. So I have spotted you 99 and 2000. How many more times have they made it in the 64-team era?
So two more. I'm going to say four total. I think it was 06 and 13.
It was 10 and 13. You are correct, though, that it is just four total. So, I mean, like, that's what they're working with. So, and
yeah, no pressure, John Schiff. Just run off the best the best run of form in the history of Virginia Tech baseball, and you'll live up to my expectations.
Yeah. I mean, like, that 4 in 7 years is not bad, I will say. So, yeah, if you're looking at Wake and you're looking at BC and Pitt and Virginia Tech, like, these are programs that are typically near the bottom of the conference. And, you know, most of those programs are not long-term ACC. You know, they're not charter ACC members or whatever. Half of them are coming from the Big East. So I mean, Pitt is just kind of in a different spot than in terms of investment and facilities and all the rest of that than a Virginia Tech or a Wake Forest. And I do think, though, I mean, you have to be confident in Wake Forest to have the top end ceiling there. And, you know, then you start looking at the next little group of ACC schools and you see that Duke has kind of graduated from being like, we could have talked about Duke in the same way we're talking about Wake Forest and the rest of this group 3 years ago, but Duke has kind of risen above that at this point. You know, they've made two super regionals. They've won an ACC tournament. They're a program that, we just expect to make the tournament at this point and potentially be in the hosting conversation. And I think, I mean, obviously that's what Wake is trying to be. Wake has made a super regional. Wake has hosted. Like, they're not that far off of where Duke is probably. It's just that for the last couple of years, things haven't gone quite right for the Deeks. And I think it's important for them to, you know, change that conversation quickly. And so that's why this 2022 season is so important, because with a good year, they're not that far away from us talking about them the way we're talking about Duke. But if they let it linger, then, you know, it just becomes harder to get back to that level.
It's kind of interesting that, you know, Wake and Duke working on those timelines where it's like, you know, Wake had some momentum there and super regional in 17, and Duke has kind of taken that and run with it, you know, and taken it a step further by getting there again. And they've become a stalwart in regionals. And it is kind of funny how those fates have shifted there a little bit. The interesting team to me in this group to see next year, because I think it could be instructive onto what to expect moving forward, is Pitt, because they used the transfer portal pretty aggressively. And so that suggests to me that they think, and they were close last year, but it suggests to me they think the roster coming back is they want to use last year as a springboard as opposed to, okay, now we're gonna build it back. And so if Pitt is the same or better next year, it might show that, hey, okay, they kind of maybe have a little bit of a formula here and they maybe have figured some things out. But it could also be that they take a little bit of a step back and you go, okay, maybe 2021, they perhaps overachieved a little bit to get where they were, because you and I even played that game during the season with Pitt where it was kind of like they were winning games, but we weren't really 100% sure what Pitt was hanging its hat on in terms of how they were winning the games. And so they did always kind of have like a little bit of, I don't want to say smoke and mirrors, but it always just kind of did have this mysterious quality to it. And so I would also believe that next year the roster is as good or better as it was last year, but the results just aren't quite as good. And that's the one where I'm just not confident in which way that is going to go. I think it'll go a little bit in one way or the other. I don't think the results are wildly different, but I couldn't really predict to you which way that's going to go. The one I'm probably most confident in, I hate to say it, is I think, you know, BC's got some individual players next year who I like. I mean, I guess you could bet on a bounce back year from Mason Pelio. Luke Gold on the infield is a really nice player, but they just lost between Frelick and Morissette and Emmett Sheehan in the rotation. Like, that's just a lot to lose for a team that was going to have to maximize its roster last year to be a regional team. And clearly they were very far from that in the end for a lot of different reasons. Their season was not too dissimilar from Wake in that way. But I just think next year for BC, although we like the general trajectory of BC, I think you and I just think next year could be the season where it, you know, it kind of ends up coming back down a little bit to where they have to build up again.
BC won 10 ACC games last year. They had a 303 conference winning percentage. Now, because they're playing, they played 33 conference games last year and only played 30 this year, or close to 30, assuming that everything goes off. I'm going to say they have a better conference record next year. I think they can do better than 10 and 23. Do they have more than 10 raw wins? Like, again, they're probably going to play three fewer games. I don't know, but I'll take them for north of 303 winning percentage in ACC play.
All right, there you go. Yeah,
I know what that's saying. Like, I understand. Like, look, Sal Frelick was a top 10, 15 pick, wherever was the Bruce pick this year. I guess it was probably not in the top 10. And Morissette was not that far off from there. Like, I think BC's going to do better than 303 conference winning percentage.
All right, well, there you have it. I mean, the thing about it is, too, is, like, I would probably change my tune a little bit if I went year by year and looked at what the worst records in the ACC were, because, you know, there are only so many times when you see a team that really bottoms out and does something like 5-25, right? I mean, right. The worst teams are typically winning 7 or 8 games in conference, and then ultimately you're not far off when you get to that.
Yeah, point. I mean, just like in the SEC last year, the two bottom teams won 9 games in a 30-game schedule, and, you know, the SEC is not the ACC. Usually the ACC is one with a couple more games than the ACC is and all the rest of that, but still, like, that's you're it seems reasonable to think that it'll be a little bit better. But, you know, I mean, you start looking at, so for some of these teams to come up, if Wake Forest is going to have a better year, if Clemson is going to push back into regionals, if Louisville is going to push back into regionals, like, who is coming down? And, you know, UNC went 18-18 in ACC play last year and rode Austin Love pretty heavily to that 18-18. I don't have the ACC stats in front of me about how many games they won with Austin Love on the mound and how many games they won without him. But I do know it was a lot of their wins came in games that Austin Love started, and now they have to replace him. And, you know, so that's going to be an interesting one to watch. I don't know who else is necessarily falling to make room for some of these teams. That is what is going to make the middle of the ACC so interesting next year. That, you know, I mean, remember, UVA went 18-18 in ACC play, and for a while looked like they weren't going to make the tournament. Yes, they went to Omaha, and yes, I can feel very smug about how things ended up for UVA, considering how far I pushed them out in the preseason of last year, but it didn't look great for a while for that. So, you know, they're going to have to be more consistent to get to the level that we think they can be at. So the middle of the ACC is it's going to be fascinating to see how that shakes out. I mean, the top of the ACC will be interesting to try and figure as well. But we've got quite the challenge when it comes to trying to, you know, pick these ACC teams that are going in the preseason top 25 here in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, it almost guarantees that there's going to be some team in the middle now that you could optimistically say stays or makes a push that ultimately ends up really falling back, because that's just the math. Like, there's probably going to be at least one team that is just really not going to be happy with the way 2022 went down, and that team is almost, there are teams like that in just about every major conference across the country, and those are the teams that are always the hardest to predict. We're always, you know, in the prediction business, like, we have to be in the preseason, we're almost always a year behind the trend on catching the teams that are on their way up, and we're typically a year behind the trend on the teams that crater, and that's just kind of the nature of the beast. But that is going to almost certainly happen to one of these teams, just based on the map of the standings next year.
Yeah, I mean, it's It's a tricky conference to sort out. I wouldn't say it's the hardest one. That's the Pac-12, but it is definitely a challenge to try and sort these teams out, especially because of the way 21 unfolded with so many games that were canceled and so many teams that were affected by COVID. And then, what you saw in the postseason from teams like NC State and UVA, just turning it on and playing their best baseball at the best time and finishing the season in Omaha. Alrighty, that's going to do it for us today on the Baseball America College Podcast. Joe, I don't know if we're coming back here next week. That's a decision that we probably have to talk about. We probably won't. This is probably the last one for the 2021 calendar year, but the easiest way to know if there is a new episode of the Baseball America College Podcast is to download or to subscribe to the Baseball America Podcast on your favorite podcasting app, be that Apple Podcast, Spotify, Stitcher, anywhere where you listen to podcasts. If you're subscribed, it goes right there into your phone. And then you don't have to wonder whether we decided to drop the surprise episode next week or not. If we don't, we will be back here in the new year, and we'll be back here in the new year regardless, with plenty more podcasts to get ready for the 2022 season, which is now very, very rapidly approaching. Joe and I have to flip into preseason mode here just about it. As soon as Christmas ends, we're going to have to
as soon as the wrapping paper hits the floor.
Yeah, exactly. We'll have to hit the button and get that preseason issue production going. So all of that is to say, we'll have plenty more to come on the podcast, in the website, in the magazine, anywhere you can get Baseball America. We'll have the 2022 season preview coming at you. So make sure you're following us on Twitter. I'm at Ted Cahill. Joe is at Joe Healy BA, and you are subscribed again to the podcast. Whenever we talk to you next, we'll have more on the 2022 season. Until then, for Joe, I want to wish everyone a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. Thank you to Tom Walter for joining us today on the podcast. Thank you to Rapsodo for presenting this episode and every episode of the Baseball America College Podcast. And thank you to everyone who has been listening to this episode and throughout the offseason, sticking with us here on the Baseball America College Podcast. For Joe, I'm Teddy. We'll talk to you next time.